Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. We are locally underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. And as you know, past episodes of Authentic Business Adventures can be found on the podcast link at drawincustomers.com. My name is James Kademan, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and helpful coach to small business owners across the country. And today I am excited because I am welcoming slash preparing to learn from Ernesto, the owner of Madison Auto Protection and Rust Proofing, and he's got a sidekick here, Lester. So Ernesto, Lester, how are you guys doing today?
Pretty good.
Very well.
Awesome. So let's start, Ernesto, with you.
Okay.
What is Madison Auto Protection and Rust Proofing?
Well, it's a company we use, we protect cars. That's what we do. That's what we take care of the customer and protect their cars for getting rust in Wisconsin.
So I have to apologize because when I was, let's call it 16, 17 years old, I get my first car.
Yeah.
I didn't know that they just rust just by existing in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So I learned that. And then I found that you can get these cans of undercoating. Yeah. So I was annihilating the bottom of my car with that stuff. And I think I did more harm than good with that. So it took me a few years to realize that there was actual professional companies that undercoat your car. So can you talk kind of about why people undercoat and what it is, I guess, the material and stuff like that?
Well, so it all depends on materials, you know. During the years, I learned, it's different materials that work and stuff that don't work.
Mm-hmm.
For example, like rubberized undercoating, that's one of the products that looks good, but it doesn't perform the way it should.
All right.
So that's one of my experiences on the area of rust proofing cars that I know what actually works.
Okay.
So let's say if why our product works, what is different from anything else, ours is not rubberized, so it's a self-healed product, and we do have two different products, which is
okay.
We apply them on what your car can be applied to.
Gotcha.
So let's say for example, a truck like yours, which is the one we did. Yours was like rust-free. Was an older truck, which is we can do the process of wax and oil.
Yeah, I went. I drove a long ways to get a rust-free truck.
Yeah.
To find one. Yeah, Wisconsin, they don't exist.
Yeah, so something like that. You know, we can apply the wax and oil. For the first coat, we have wax, and the second oil is a oil base, which is, the oil base is what actually really works in the long run. But that product would wear off on time. So by applying the wax and oil, you can keep the oil longer on the actual metal. Yeah.
Okay. So the wax goes on first.
Yeah, the wax goes on first.
Okay. And then there's a second application of oil.
Yeah.
On top of the wax.
Yeah.
Okay. And you mentioned self-healing.
Yeah. So
how does that work?
So let's say if you apply the rubberized undercoating, you can, if you have friction on the frame, there's nothing you can do. That's the way cars are built.
Yeah.
They're gonna have friction, and the friction it will crack your coating. So that's how you actually have the rubberized, such a hard product, it will crack and would let the water go into the between the product and the metal.
And
like you just say, you know, it will make more harm than good in the long run because the moisture will just not dry. It will stay there. It will start eating up the metal.
Well, so it essentially gets trapped.
Yep.
When you spray that stuff on there, over the course of time, you're essentially creating places for water to hang out.
Pretty much.
The opposite of what you're trying to do.
Yeah, and especially with the brine here in Wisconsin, you know, especially here in the city of Madison, they spray so much.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff is so liquidy.
It
will just stay there, just eat the metal so fast.
Interesting.
Faster than any other state.
I had a Jeep Wrangler TJ that I was spraying just so much undercoating on there. And I drove it in the winter 1 year, and that frame almost didn't exist anymore.
Yeah, that's
the
reason.
It was crazy. I thought I was protecting it, but apparently I was harming it.
Yeah, because he was doing just trapping everything.
Sure.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, so going back about our process, you know, so that's why the wax and oil is so effective.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's say with the friction, you're not going to have that cracking.
So all right.
The oil will heal the wax in time.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So that's what's so good about it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And you do a reapplication every year.
Yeah. So we do a touch-up. Okay. Just to make sure everything is nice and, you know, cover.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because over the course of time.
Yeah, because it's still nothing is forever though.
Right.
You know, you gotta say the truth when you're applying any product. You know, mm-hmm. nothing is forever. You need maintenance on anything.
Right.
It's just like, you know, you take your car to get all your chain every 3,000 miles, or every 5,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So you gotta get your underbody taken care of the mm-hmm. same way. So it's the same thing.
Interesting. So let's talk about how you got into this business.
Yeah.
So how long have you been doing this?
I started doing this since 2004.
Okay. So it's been a while.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And how did you get that first gig? You're just like, hey, nothing would please me more than hanging out under a car spraying oil.
No, I always like working with cars.
Okay. All right.
You know, I moved to the United States in 2002.
Okay.
So, you know, I worked in a catering business for a couple of years. I mean,
catering business?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's so, 180 switch there.
Yeah. So I always knew that when I worked with cars, because, mm-hmm. you know, since being in a new country, new surroundings, so you don't know what's going on. So,
right.
You know, plus the language barriers there, so it's kind of hard.
Okay.
So one of my brothers started working on a place where I worked for 12 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So he's the one who got me into the job. So,
gotcha.
So,
all right.
So that was my position. As I started working, I started rust-proofing cars. That's what I was doing.
So did you know anything about rust-proofing, so to speak, before you got the gig? Or did you kind of learn on the job?
I didn't know anything. What I was surprised when I came to the United States, especially Madison, how bad the cars was.
So, oh, yeah.
So, you know, coming from Mexico, where you don't see something like that, and then you come here.
Not a whole lot of salt thrown on the road.
Yeah,
Mexico.
And then you see a five-year-old car, and it's missing half of the rock panel, half of the wheel.
Yeah.
It's like, it's amazing. Like, what the heck?
Yeah, I was looking for a little truck, and I was looking at Toyota Tacomas and Nissan Frontiers, and I learned that the Tacomas have their frames replaced under warranty.
Yeah.
And I thought, wait a second, the whole frame... How, like, that's a lot of bolts. It seems so weird to me, but they just...
And also, you know, people don't know this much, but they don't really... Some of them get the frame replaced. They got the frame undercoated.
Oh. All right.
So they didn't... I would say 70% of those trucks didn't got the frame replaced.
Did not?
Did not. Okay. You would have to have a severe damage to it to be replaced.
Interesting.
Which is... Talking about that, we just have a Tundra, 2002 Tundra in the shop right now. It got to the point where the frame is, you know, cracked in the middle of the back end.
Cracked?
Yeah.
That seems like a little bit of a safety issue to the frame.
It is, yeah.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. That just blew my mind in the 2000s here, right?
Yeah.
I actually had a friend come into his shop, and he had a Prius.
Okay.
What year was that Prius? 2006 Prius, and the spring had rusted, and the metal spring broke.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, and so when he took pressure off of it, the spring was just, it was, you could tell it was rusted, but it was just like came apart.
Wow.
And I don't know if you've seen other ones than that. That's the one that I was experiencing. My friend had came in there, and it just blew my mind that rust could actually be that powerful.
Wow. Yeah, because you're talking about metal that's super thick.
Yeah, very super thick. And so that really was an eye-opener to me and to what it can lead to.
Sure. Interesting. So generally speaking, I guess from your experience, does the public know that there's a way to prevent this? Or is it just kind of like, just sell the car when it's rusted out kind of thing, or drive until the seat falls out?
You know, rust proofing that came, you know, back in the 70s, it was for what I heard.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the 70s and 80s, you know, that's the time when they make the rust proofing time.
Okay.
So, you know, there was the shops came along in the 70s and 80s. But that industry went through the dealerships. So the car lots would take that business and, you know, they resell the product for a higher price.
Okay.
And then, you know, they will sell it, send the car to the pliers.
All right.
So that industry or customers know how to take care of the car for the winter. It went away.
Okay.
Just because of the, you know, got privatized. By
sure.
That.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. All right.
So that's why, you know, like the newer generations, I mean, people from the 70s and 80s, they know, but they still back in the days of even early 2000s, you know,
mm-hmm.
If you want to get your car rust-proof, you have to go through the dealer, and the dealer will send it to the...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So nowadays, you know, you can actually, it's the more companies that they sell products. So yeah, you can actually go out of the dealerships and get your own rust-proofing then.
I remember the little stickers that had a little tank that said Auto Armor on them.
Yeah.
I think in the 80s.
So that's one. So it was Auto Armor, which is the company owns different names of the same product. So they apply the same product.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's like six different names.
Six different names?
Yeah, six different
names. Wow, okay.
Yeah, so they own six different names, but they apply the same product.
All right.
Yeah, it's, you know, this is just even the paperwork is the same wording, sure, with just different different logo and different name of the.
All right. So how or has the technology really changed in undercoating in the past 20, 30 years?
Companies like that, you know, they went for a cheaper product. So,
okay.
It performs for like a couple years, but the same thing is rubberized on the coating. So on the long run, it's actually doing more harm than anything else.
Okay.
You know, it's new companies, they just develop what actually stuff works.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I like about it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why my company, you know, before I went on business, I did so much research on it to see what product would actually work.
All right.
What actually I can say to my customer, this is what I'm selling you, and this is exactly how it's going to work.
All right.
The place where I used to work, you know, I was just an applier, so it was the guy who's doing the undercoating, that's it. But at the same time, you know, you cannot close your eyes when you see a truck coming back 2 years after, and it's like, you know, it's rust everywhere.
Oh.
After you just rust proof it 2 years prior.
So you could see the before and after, saying, so, oh, you just wasted your money, man.
Pretty much, you know, it's like, it becomes just more like, hey, man, this is just someone stealing your money.
Oh, they're just selling literally snake oil kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we can make it look nice and black and hide that stuff away, but
sure,
it still is. It will be there.
For the next hour, it'll look good.
Yeah, for the next, you know, 6 months, but as soon as you hit the snow again, it will come back.
Interesting. All right.
Yeah.
So how did you come across this, the two-stage product that you use?
So, you know, like I said, I researched online for, you know, I was... So how it went, you know, I was supposed to go on business with my brother, when the owner of the shop that I used to work for, he was retiring, so was selling it as a business. It didn't work out between him and I.
Okay, so, your brother and you?
Yeah,
brother.
So we came in different terms.
Sure.
It didn't work out for me, so I moved out, so I started doing my own research.
All right, that might be for the best, right? Getting into business with family can be a challenge.
You know, it's like they say, you know, working with your family is the hardest thing to do.
It's tough to fire them.
It's hard to fire them. You know, you have feelings, attachments.
Sure,
It's really hard.
Yeah, makes Thanksgiving dinner a little tough.
Yeah, it's just, that was for the best, I would say.
Yeah, it's fair.
But also, you know, even if I would buy those business, I was thinking to move on from that.
Okay.
From that.
Sure.
As soon as we paid the loan, I was thinking, you know,
right,
I got to be by my own. It was no way I would stay there. So that just speed up the process.
That's fair. We just bypass those early stages.
So, that just speed up the process, you know. But it speed up the process. So I didn't know that it would be speed up that quick.
Oh.
Yeah.
So business is going really well.
Yeah. So business is going well. You know, I selling the product and I'm proud of it.
Mm-hmm.
I seen the results. I seen cars coming back.
Yeah.
I see exactly what I was expecting to
see. Yeah. Hopefully when you saw mine recently, it was okay.
Yeah, I mean, you bring yours, it was clean as I thought it would be.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was actually at the very early on stage with him. Mm-hmm. When he committed to the product, me and my friend were helping him set up. My friend basically did the technology work for his website.
Okay, sure.
And I was... given him like researching the product, what he had told me, and come to find out the Canadian Army actually uses this product under a different name. It's the same product.
Oh, interesting.
But in the US it goes by a different name.
Wow.
And so I found that to be very interesting, and then it just kept getting deeper, and I was surprised that no one else was on this product, because it was around the Canadian Army, was that they had it 10 years plus at that point?
10 years prior.
So I was really, really shocked. And it's almost like if a business kind of has the lock, or you know, no one else, the monopoly on it,
right,
to break into that, even, you know, it was quite amazing. And then a company out of New Hampshire got the product and then started distributing it. And I think you really have to do a lot of research,
yeah,
to come to that point. And we're one of the only ones in Wisconsin with this product.
In the beginning, yeah.
Yeah, at the beginning. And and going back to one thing you said about, mm-hmm, where he checks it every year.
Yeah.
What he's actually looking for is rocks are the main culprit to this product.
Sure.
Because he looked at his product a year. If you're not into heavy gravel and stuff like that, there's nothing he really has to touch up.
Oh, interesting.
So it's really that's the only combatant. And we're talking minuscule compared to the rubberized product, where it's like completely peeling off in,
yeah,
large strips.
Yeah, on my Jeep, it would come off in sheets.
Yeah.
Exactly with the rubberized product.
I was working on something on the suspension, and I was getting rained on with rust and crust, and this sheet of undercoating on one side and frame on the other side came down. And I thought, huh, that's not good. So I sold the Jeep.
Yeah.
Like, this is a headache that I don't know how deep this goes, so just gotta walk away.
Just curious how you found the product.
So it's interesting, because to find you specifically, I didn't know you existed before.
Yeah.
So I jumped on the Google machine and I'm like, hey, I bought this truck out of California, so it's rust free and I'd like to keep it rust free. So I knew that undercoating was a thing. Yeah, I knew that undercoating was such a thing, and I bought it in the winter of last year, that I called the dealership. It was just some tiny mom and pop dealership that I bought it from out of state, and I called them up and said, hey, do you do undercoating? But of course they don't have winter where they were, so they're like, what? So I'm like, okay, because I was hoping to get it undercoated before I even brought it home, because winter was just on the cusp then. So I just got on the Google machine and I started typing in undercoating, and I came across the typical names that I recognize, whatever. And their reviews weren't that hot. And then I started digging into, well, maybe their products are different, right? Like, what is undercoating? Undercoating is one of those things that you don't see it. So yeah, for me to know what's good and what's bad, I learned that the stuff in the can is junk. And you get online and people are talking about just taking used oil and spraying it on there. And I'm like, well, that seems like a mess.
Wow.
Yeah, literally, like, who knows what's in the oil, right? Hope it's good or good enough for your frame. So it's just one of those, like, as you go down the rabbit hole of research, you just figure out what's working and what's not. And it's one of those things that when you leave the place that undercoated your vehicle, you're hoping that it's going to work. There's nothing that you can be like, hey, that's not going to work, or that didn't work, because not like rust shows up instantly. You're trusting that the company that's servicing your vehicle has a good product, and that 2 years, 5 years, 10 years down the road, your vehicle still looks tip-top. Like, you don't know. You're trusting them. And so looking at the reviews, and some of these reviews go back years, and there seemed to be a common theme. They're like, one, from my point of view, service is a huge deal. And a lot of times people are just complaining about the people behind the counter being cranky.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to deal with a cranky person. I'm in the customer service business, so cranky, like, I don't care how awesome your product is. But then you see them about their product not being that great. And yours, I stumbled upon your website, and you had phenomenal reviews. And they were, I think you're 5-star, right?
Yeah.
I just looked, you're 59 5-star reviews.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how is that even possible? Because even accidental 1-star reviews get on there, just irate people pissed at no reason, right? Like, I called you on Tuesday and you couldn't get me in Tuesday afternoon, so I'm going to leave a 1-star review. Like, you didn't even have that. So I'm like, okay, this guy's got to be doing something right. And then I saw that you did the touch-up.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, okay, nothing lasts forever, like you said. And the bottom of your vehicle's got to be getting abused. Like, as a side tangent, I went for a motorcycle ride a few years ago, and I was an idiot. I wore a t-shirt and shorts, and I'm going down the highway, and it's just any road, right? It's just any road. I'm going 70 miles an hour, and I'm getting sandblasted.
Yeah.
Like, there's just stuff flying around at 70 miles an hour, and it was hurting. And all I could think is, your car's got to take this all day when it's driving. Like, it's just getting sandblasted. So what is the bottom of your car taking, right?
Yep.
Even more. So when I saw that you did the touch-up thing, I'm like, okay, here's a person that's using a product that they believe in, and they believe in it so much that they're going to essentially touch it up every year, knowing that something's going to go wrong, being like it's just maintenance, right?
Yeah.
So it seemed like, that seems cool. So, and then I just called you up. Yeah. I almost didn't use you because you didn't answer the phone, and that's a thing.
No.
But in your industry, not a whole lot of people answer their phones. So maybe in a lot of industries, whatever. But that's with my call answering service, I'm picky about that.
Mm.
No, but
that's interesting.
That's the game. Because like for someone like me, I'm just like, I don't want to, after you went down, you're like a half hour into Google learning about all this stuff. Then you're just like, okay, you got to pull the trigger, make a decision, move on with your life. I can't spend days or weeks studying undercoding, right? Like, it's just a car or it's just a truck, whatever. It's not the end of the world. So you just make the call and get it done and move on. And I've been happy with the results, really happy.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah.
Well, one thing I wanted to add, when I was doing the actual research, that he didn't really, he had told me the basic stuff about the research already, and I just kind of kept going deeper and deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And the actual oil that is used is food grade oil.
Food grade oil.
Yes.
Is it petroleum based or plant based?
This is so this is a question that I can't remember off the top of my head.
I don't remember though.
If I had to guess, I would say petroleum-based, just based on the smell.
Yeah, but as far as when I saw the food grade, and I was like, wow, that's interesting. So, like, you know, a lot of food products have petroleum in them mm-hmm. as well. I grew up on Velveeta growing up in Georgia. I'm sure Wisconsinites did not. I say Velveeta, and they're like, what is that?
Yeah, fake cheese.
Yeah, and so, like, I was familiar with this, and that kind of really, I didn't really realize, but you were telling me people were actually spraying actual oil on there.
Oh yeah,
and that's like, that's like the resources when that will actually start dripping, and where the formula he uses is a no drip formula, and it's food grade as well, mm-hmm. and that just really blew me away when I saw that.
You know, it's interesting about the no drip thing because I did, after I had you do work, I had to throw on front struts. And that stuff took 3 days to get off my hands.
Wow.
Yeah, like it.
That's interesting.
I'm like, what is this stuff? Right? It was like magic marker.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, as far as the permanence goes, it wasn't, and it was thick. It was one of those things that wasn't just like motor oil where you can just wash it off and move on with your life. I'm like, this has become a part of me now for a little bit. So whenever I have to do underbody work or anything like that under there, like replacing suspension components, it's like, get out the rubber gloves, otherwise
it was thick too.
You're going to be looking like you're leaving fingerprints everywhere for the next 2 days. Yeah, so it's interesting product.
That's what I really like about it.
So did you, like you did your research, at what point did you decide, this is the stuff that I'm going to use?
That's the first time I saw it. As soon as I figured it out, that's exactly what it was.
Okay.
That just click.
Okay.
The reason why, you know, it's just... well, I told this story to many of my customers. I probably told you that story too when I first met you.
Sure.
You know, one of my friends owns a mechanical shop on the west side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I just stop by and see how he's doing something.
Sure.
So that was probably 6 years ago, maybe even longer than that. I stopped by, he had a 2002 Ford Explorer up in the rack.
Mm-hmm.
I crawl on, there's like, did you just bring this thing from Florida? It's like, yeah, it's super clean. It was like rust free.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like a Florida car. You know? If you bring a car from a 2002 Explorer from Florida and you compare 2002 Explorer from Wisconsin, it's like,
the 2002 is gone.
It's like, it's big difference when you crawl
huge,
on there. So I crawl, I was like, my God, you know, the brake lines, the AC lines, everything just intact.
Huh.
So, luckily enough, you know, the owner came out, you know, he walked about 10 minutes after me. Like,
yeah.
He just brought this one from Florida? He's like, no, I bought a brand new Wisconsin, and I had it since then. So what did you do to keep it? You don't drive it in the winter? Even if you don't drive it in the winter, if you drive it, like spring, you still gonna have that rust because the brine.
June, August. That's all.
Because, this brine is still on the roads. It's still, closer to the summer. But then this is all gone. So it's like, no, just every year I spray oil.
Huh.
Not more oil. It's like, he didn't tell me the brand of the oil, but it's just this, you stick oil, you just spray on top, just spray everything.
All right.
And that's what I do every year. That's I was able to keep it that way.
All right.
So I was like, that's what it works.
All right.
Yeah, that's actually what actually works.
Nice.
So that's how it's like, I knew more oil works, but it wears off very quick. But with the more oil, what is not good about it, because if it gets to the suspension parts, it will start deteriorating the bushings and rubber and everything. Yep. It will save the metal if you apply it twice a year, but the rest of the stuff, like the rubber stuff, it will take a beating.
Yeah, the oil, to me, I feel like there's value to it, because I had a 79 Malibu that had pretty much every gasket on that engine leaking.
Yeah.
And you could see the vacuum from driving under the car. You could see the oil right down the tunnel, right? The drive shaft tunnel.
Yeah.
The sides of the car where it wasn't getting the spray, totally rusty.
Yep.
But where it had that engine spray was just fine.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I used to joke that, like, this engine comes with free undercoating. So there was this, foot and a half wide strip of clean metal on that car. Everything else was Swiss cheese. It's a mess. But it was interesting. Like, oh, okay, I get it. I see what's working.
I
can't imagine being under my car with some pump trying to spray motor oil on there.
Yeah. But,
or anything.
It'll be a mess, though.
Oh, my gosh. And then just look at your driveway. Like, this car looks good.
So, and then so doing that research, and then I saw, I heard about this product. I started the research on it. And especially my concern was more about how it's going to work in the long run and how if it's going to affect the suspension the way I think it's going to affect, it's not going to affect it. So, I called the owner.
The owner of the
owner of the company, I talked to him, they're super nice people. The open book, they talk to you about whatever you want to talk about the product. Oh, wow. They talk to you as long as they can. They know what they're selling, so I bet that's one of the things, like, this is what I like.
Nice.
It's really hard to get to the main owner and talk to him about the product.
Yeah.
You can talk about
a lot of businesses. Yeah.
You can talk about customer service, and they can give you picks here and there, but you're not going to talk to the owner. It's going to be really hard.
It's interesting you say that. I just had a Gmail address that I don't use very often.
Yeah.
I got an email from Google that said, we're going to cancel your email for something. And I'm like, who do I talk to solve this? There's no.
Yeah.
Let me just call Google up and say, hey, right? Like, it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
It's not even an option.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard to get to the top. And, as soon as I talk to him and, he laid out the way his business works and how they doing on sales and stuff like that. Because now, they sell the product, but they also apply it themselves.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay.
So that's what I was like, this is what actually, this is what I've been thinking about it. This is what actually works. So I talked to, he has a brother, so I talked to both of them on the marketing side and the product side.
Yeah.
And both of them, they have a great answers for me. And I just, figured it out, this is it.
All right.
This is what I like. This is what it works.
Sure.
Talk about the oil itself, that actually don't deteriorate any suspension parts, actually help them.
All right.
So they keep it nice and healthy. Mm-hmm. And it will not dry your rubber or anything like that. So
that
was one of my concerns.
I would say it's a huge concern.
Yeah, because I know the motor oil works, like you just said, because if you like cars and you go to a junkyard, you can see right away them. If you see a frame with a leak oil leaking, you're going to see the spots that are rust-free.
Yeah.
There may be dirt and stuff, but you're going to see the metal there. If you scrape down, it's going to be pure metal. But the stuff, there's no oil on there. It's rusted.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. It's pro-cons, I guess. I want to talk about the other stuff that you guys have going on. You're doing some vinyl hood protection and stuff, paint protection type stuff?
So, we're not doing the cost PPF. It's a paint protection film.
Okay, sure.
The reason we haven't, we can do it, but we're not certified to do it yet.
Gotcha.
Just because of COVID. So since we cannot go and get certified to the place. Mm. We're doing the ceramic pro. It's a ceramic coating.
Okay.
That's another high-end product that really protects your paint.
Okay.
Yeah. So it will help with oxidation on the paint. You know, here in Wisconsin, it's more about keeping your car clean, you know, mm-hmm. especially on the long winter. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't clean it as often.
Right.
But you still have some oxidation because the brine that will, you know, mm-hmm. stick into the paint. Then
you can see when you go for a drive that your car just has this film of salt and dirt on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that stuff will help a lot keeping your car clean and keeping the paint healthy. Okay. Yeah.
So this is more, this is not a solid product then. This is more a step or two up from wax? Is that the idea? Or
that was 20 steps up.
20 steps up. Okay. All right. Is it a liquid product when you apply it?
It's liquid product.
It's not a sheet.
It's not a sheet. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a liquid product, yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, it's also a grade of ceramic coatings. From what I see so far, this is above everything, I say.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
Because, you know, it's a low-end products, middle-end products, and how you see how stuff works is when you're applying it. Any ceramic coating, you can only apply a small, let's say, 3x3 sections.
Okay.
The reason why, because you had to apply, you had to let it sit, and then you had to wipe it off and polish it.
Okay.
How you know which one is the best is one the hardest to polish.
Oh, when it's harder to get off there.
Yeah.
Then, okay, so, you know it's tougher.
That's tougher, yeah.
All right.
And you know the one, the ceramic pro brand, that is one of the hardest for us to apply. All
right.
It's, we can be doing a truck for two people. It would take us 8 hours to apply the whole truck.
8 hours?
Yeah.
So you're talking two people, 16 hours?
Yeah.
Wow. You have to chisel this stuff off, or what does it do?
Well, I mean, four coats is a lifetime. Yeah. Like, you don't have to do anything. It's
lifetime.
Yeah, lifetime on four coats. And we're talking, there's actually videos that when I started doing research, when he was telling me about the product at the beginning of the setup of the shop, literally they're dumping mud on it and it just goes away. And it's just like nothing's on your hood. And they're like dumping mud on it. So, and they do it like half coating, half not. And then the mud's just like all on the paint, and the other is just like ripping off, and it's like, whoa, this, okay, I see what's going on here. And I was really amazed by the product. Didn't know any type of product existed like that. Mm-hmm. Except for the coatings, which I have seen on the ultra high-end cars, but yeah, it's really a special product, I feel, in overall great price range as well.
Wow.
Yeah, it sure is. So, you know, talking about paint protection, this is the same thing I learned from working in the other place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of upsetting to me because of, you know, if the customer pay, you know, let's say if you get your rust proof and your paint protection done through a dealership, you know, you end up paying $1,500, you know,
$1,500. Wow. That's a pretty penny.
It's a lot of money, though. So it's a lot of money for what you're getting, you know.
Right.
It would take us, not kidding, it would take us about 2 hours and a half to get everything done. In and out the door.
Wow.
And that's how much, you know, you're paying $1,600 for 2.5 hours.
They're loving selling that, right?
And that was including, you know, interior protection and paint protection, everything like that.
Holy cow.
In and out the door, 2.5 hours.
They just spray bombing the whole thing with some thinner?
The ceramic protection was just spray foam. You know, it's just exactly like you go into the dealership. To the car wash, though, I mean. If you go to the car wash, you know, have the spray wax.
Yeah.
You know, you wash your car and then they have this.
Yeah. That's what they're putting on there?
It's very similar product and it doesn't work. It works, you know, it works just like wax. You know,
sure.
If you wash it, let's say if you, you know, like I told customers, like, you know, they call me, it's like, what is the difference ceramic chlorine besides waxing my car every month?
Mm-hmm.
I told them the truth, you know, it's exactly the same thing. If you wax your car every month, you're going to get the same results.
Who waxes your car?
But who waxes your car? It, you know, but who's doing every month?
That seems like
that's a lot of work. But if you do it every month, it's gonna work because wax, you know, It's, I would say if you drive it every day, and especially here in Wisconsin, you're going to get at the most 1 month.
Yeah, at best.
So yeah, when so but when you're paying $1,600 and you get the same results, the stuff fades away in a month. But you do have a, you know, you have this sheet that we say is a warranty, which is if you read it and what it covers, it's just
sure.
It will be really hard. That will happen here in Wisconsin.
Okay. Okay. So you're essentially buying worthless peace of mind.
Pretty much.
Okay.
So, you know, but that's going back to the same, you know, the old mentality, you know, they like the dealership privatized the area for paying protecting your car in general.
All right.
So they just make a profit out of you, but you don't get what actually we're paying for.
All right. Interesting.
So, you know, that was one of my things, you know, I want to sell stuff that actually work mm-hmm. and I will make the customer happy.
Okay.
You know. Even if they come and pay me $1,600,
mm-hmm.
I know if I've taken $1,600 to somebody, it's actually work that we actually
do. There's value there, sure.
It's a value. It's a product that actually works. It's a program for perform the way it should perform.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's one of the part that I'm really proud of my business.
Okay.
That we just not sell out. We just right. sell product that actually works.
Okay. Something that you can be proud to sell.
Yeah.
So the ceramic stuff, does that, like, is it thick enough where it's protecting the paint from road, like that sandblast stuff, or is that more?
It will help, but, you know, the same thing, you know, if you have a rock going straight to the metal, there's yeah. nothing you can do.
Okay.
Even the best protection is not going to.
Gotcha. It's gonna okay.
But if we're talking about, you know, what actually is really going to prevent, like, chips and stuff like that, it'd be the paint protection film.
Okay.
That's the next level up,
mm-hmm.
But that stuff actually really works.
Okay.
Because if you have, you know, you're going to have a rock chip, especially people who drive on the highway, you know, if you mm-hmm. drive in the back of a truck full of sand, you're going to take damage. So.
Mm-hmm.
So by having the protection film, you know, if you end up damage the film, you can just peel it off and reapply it, and the paint on the car is going to be
all right.
good as new.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
And one more thing about this PPF is self-heal.
Oh.
All you got to do is just reapply heat to it. It will heal itself.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that all of them, or is that specific ones that do that?
You know, I just talking about the one that the Ceramic Pro provides. So
okay.
The rest, they're pretty generic, though.
Okay.
It's probably a couple more high-end brands that they work.
Mm-hmm.
But the generic ones, so I don't want to talk about brands. So.
Right.
If it's a brand that you know for years, that's a generic one.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
So, yeah, you know, that's a generic. So, I mean, they work.
Yeah.
They don't look as clean as the Ceramic Pro PPF. And, okay. You know, because as soon as we apply, if you see the film, you come close to it. You're not even, if you don't know not much about cars, you're not going to see if there's light on the paint.
Okay, so it's not that little yellowish.
You don't have the yellow, you don't have the blurring look in okay. it. It just looks through it.
Oh, very cool.
So that's one of the things I really like about
it. Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, it's until you see it, it's mm-hmm. when actually it makes sense.
Nice. I want to downshift into the business side
yeah.
and talk about you starting your business. So your brother didn't join you, whatever. And it sounds like you did not buy this business that you were going to that you were working at before. Is that right?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Yes.
So you decide, hey, I'm going off on my own. Tell me about how you decided to go off on your own, not buying this business, and how you decided where you're going to place your business.
That's a long story, though. Yeah, it was.
We got a few minutes. It's all good.
You know, actually, it's a long story in a short period of time. Okay?
Mm. Fair. All right.
Fair. Yeah.
Let's get going.
this probably was, what, 5 months altogether since I...
Yeah.
So, you know, the idea was me going to business, you know, buy the business, my brother and I. It didn't work out. They tried to give me an offer that I didn't want to take.
Okay, your brother did?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I didn't feel in the time it was fair. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, you visualize, when you're about going business, you visualize the future
mm-hmm.
more than the short term. It's like,
you have to.
Yeah, you have to, right? So I told myself, like, do I really want this in the short term or want to reach this in the longer term? So it's like, maybe I should take a pay cut right now and deal with the headaches by myself, and move on from this. You know, this is kind of messy. Yeah, so I left it behind. I started, you know, like I say, I started doing all this sort of research and what I'm gonna do, and so, which was my main thing in the beginning. You know, always, you know, work in the business until I can actually move on and start my own.
Sure.
But this is just giving me the jump start to start my own.
All right.
So when that happened, you know, I moved on. I quit the place, and then as you know, it took me 2 weeks. I did all this research, which I already. You know, the main part was actually, okay, this is the time you got to do it.
Yeah.
So I said, you know, talk to the owners of the products and stuff. And then the 2 weeks went along, so I was like, okay, so I'm going to give myself a window time to find a place where I can, you know, open up the shop.
Yeah.
Which was really hard to do.
And finding a place?
Finding a place in 1 month, because...
That is pretty short. Yeah,
it's pretty short. And for me, it was more the location, though.
Okay.
Where the customer could be in and out.
Right.
So it would be not hard for them to find me. And also easy enough for them to, you know, come in and...
I imagine it was tough as well to find a place that would let you work on cars.
Yeah, that's one of the hardest things. First, we found a place. And, you know, it's like, it was a sub-place.
Yeah.
It's like, because, like I say, you know, it was really hard to find a place with something that would work with the way we want the business would be set up. So we found a place, and then they just, it went by. So we took the sublease. We talked to the guy who was head of the lease at that time. He's like, you know, the landlord said it's okay, stuff like that. So a week and a half ago, went along.
Yeah.
And we started moving in. We started, you know, we took the heavy equipment in, everything.
And I just want to cut in the heavy equipment he's talking about. We actually the lift, which you probably saw.
Yeah, the hoist, yeah.
We call it the blue thing.
Yeah.
we actually went to Iowa to pick that up. It was in a farmer's garage, and he was like not old enough and wasn't working on cars anymore. It was in great shape, so we went down there and got that, and it was. Quite difficult to move around, to say the least.
Oh, I bet. That's
and
a lot of metal.
It's, I've never seen anything like that. And it was, so we actually put it in this guy's thing. And I started looking around. Also, like, he obviously was not set up for automotive. What he was set up for was printers. His actual business before that was buying printers from China.
Okay.
Through Chinese printers, but he was buying them at just like regular places you would buy them here, and then he was actually getting them together, hundreds of them, and selling them back to China in suburban areas that because you couldn't get the same printers here that you could get here, they were only for US.
Interesting.
So he was selling them back, and then what happened to him was he was actually a UW professor, and this was his side gig.
Okay.
The market crashed. And so he was stuck with all these printers. He couldn't do it anymore, and that's when he had to get out and sublease. And so when we brought that in there, you know, he said he had talked to the landlord, but then when we put our stuff in, apparently the landlord probably saw that and was like, we don't allow cars. So there was some miscommunication.
Oh, sure.
Right. And that, I just wanted to add that in.
So
and
then it's like...
So you're already moving like, stuff in, and they're like,
we're about done.
You can't be
here. So we just got, we just about to put the stuff together. In the
so then you ate up a lot of your month.
Yeah.
So thinking around with that.
Like, wow, what are we going to do next? But there was like another week, and then we find the place that we are right now.
All right.
So I was without a place for a month and a half.
Wow.
Which is, you know, for... It seems to me longer than that, but for a lot of people, it's harder to find a spot, you know, where you can actually start your business that quick.
Yeah, sometimes it takes a few weeks just for the landlord to get you a lease.
Yeah. So
like some landlords just don't move at the speed of business.
Yeah.
At least in my experience.
Yeah. So everything just went by. So, I mean, it, like I said, for me, it was probably like 5 months of time. It was just a month and a half.
All right.
Yeah. So a month and a half, you know, he's the one who stayed by me. It took us 3 months to set up the place.
All right.
Yeah. You know, I did everything myself. We set up the paint booth. We set up the hoist, everything, all the electrical equipment that we needed to put inside the shop. So
did you have to get a loan to cover all this, or did you have enough in savings to cover?
I got enough in savings, though. So it was all that.
So you had a few months with no income coming in.
Yeah.
And your hand to pump out money.
Actually, I was working a full time still.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
Oh, so wow.
I was working full time and, you know, putting the shop together.
All right. So at the same place? The other?
No. I quit that place before.
So just a different hustle, just to bide your time a little bit. All right.
So I was working that full time and, you know, just working as many hours as I could to put a shop together.
Mm-hmm.
So it took us about, you know, 3 months to set it up. And then, you know, you open the doors. It's like, this is time. You wait for the first customer.
So just stare at the phone waiting for it to show up.
Lucky enough, you know, I knew a lot of people. So they all, you know, decide, go, you know, take some of my services. So.
Okay.
And that's how it slowly worked them out. And,
yeah.
And, you know, the product alone that would bring us a lot of customers too, though. So.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So by the end of that year, we didn't make much profit, but we make enough to cover the bills of that year.
So at least broke even.
So, you know, for what I heard, it's really hard for any business to broke even the first year.
Yeah, I would think, especially a fairly capital intensive one like yours.
Yeah, for the first year, you know, it takes a couple of years to make a profit.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, you know, the second year our business is quadruple.
Quadruple.
Yeah. So, you know.
Wow.
And what really surprised me. The undercoating, we're having people drive from other states, from Iowa, from Illinois, and
to come to you guys.
Yes. Yeah. And this, like, I didn't understand it. And but I know how much he believes in these products,
mm-hmm.
and how much work he puts into it. And so all in all, it kind of makes sense. But one thing about him and his, just the way everything comes together. Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite quotes by Bruce Lee, use no way as the way and use no limit as your limit. Like that, like, embodies. And I think that's why, you know, it's such an amazing story when you put all these pieces, how it started and really his whole origin story of this business.
Right. That's cool. So you're in year two, is that right?
Yeah.
All right. So you must be on the verge of outgrowing your shop, or how does that work?
We actually outgrow the shop already, though.
Okay, because quadrupled.
That's
a big multiplier in a year.
Yeah, we're thinking to actually, I don't know, move a bigger shop.
Okay.
Now, I don't know how soon that will be, but
sure.
I think the more services we add into it, mm-hmm. the more we're going to grow.
All right.
Especially, you know, with the service that we provide, you know, we provide quality of services. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, we just are talking about that, you know, people coming from different places. So we just have a lady. She was 3 weeks ago. She called me and asking me, she had a 1992 Ford F-150.
Okay.
Super nice truck, rust free. She was looking for someone, you know, to get the undercoating done and,
mm-hmm.
and get the paint protection. She's like, you know, I've been doing research for a month and a half. It's like,
well, I did it for a half hour. I thought that was a long time.
Yes, wow. It's like, you know, because I want, I have this, it's a 1992. Do you don't see?
Yeah, it's
you don't
some
see,
age.
You don't see. I mean, if you have a 2020, you know, it's like it's gonna take you probably 2 hours to do the research. But in the 1992, you wanna get the guy who actually can do it right, because mm-hmm. you wanna keep the truck, especially if you're planning to drive it during the winter months. So she's like, the reason I choose you is just because of your Google reviews.
Nice.
You know, they all those reviews, they talk about, they are personalized reviews of wherever who went to place, you know.
Yeah.
They don't talk about, you know, they talk about the quality of product, but they're not all generic. So they all talk about the experience.
Yeah, that's one thing I noticed. That's one thing I noticed, where it wasn't just excellent or you rah-rah or just one sentence, blah. It was like, so there I was with my 1985 Calais and going into this whole story, like, wow.
Yeah.
There, if you guys did this the Black Hat way, you went through a lot of work. So these seem super legit.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, one, that you accomplished that, and two, that people took the time to write a review on undercoating.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's a hard thing to...
Like, I try to get people to leave a review for a book, and they're like, oh my gosh, I don't have 10 seconds out of my life to do that.
Ugh. Yeah.
I think one thing with these reviews, it's it revolves around their past experience with automotive.
Mm.
And I think because this experience and these products and him and his work ethic and how he treats customers is so different that people are shocked.
That's fair.
And it's...
That's totally fair. Yeah, you do not... You don't necessarily expect good customer service in, well, anywhere, really. You want it.
Yeah.
But your expectation, I feel like it's gone so downhill in the past 10, 20 years that when somebody is nice or follows up or just tells you what they're going to do, it's rare and it sticks out. Like when I was talking with the whole Gmail thing, I feel like the whole Silicon Valley technology thing, they've removed the service aspect or they try to automate it. Mm-hmm. They took the humanity out of it.
Pretty much.
And the humanity was the nice part. So when it's just automated, it's black and white and it's very impersonal. And it's kind of, you don't feel like you're cared for then. You are purely a customer.
Yeah.
You are a means to revenue. That's it.
Agreed.
Yeah. So it's just, it's become weird. Even like you go to McDonald's or something, it's automated. Maybe that was because they were having a tough time finding employees.
Yeah.
Right? It's just a weird...
It's a weird system.
The customer service thing has gone dramatically downhill. So, yeah. It's... I know with us, when we answer phones for customers, we... I want to say fairly often, get people saying, oh, you're real. And they don't know. They're like, well, I don't even know what to do. I was expecting an answering machine or voicemail or something like that. Like they didn't know. I got to talk to a person? Like I didn't even know. What's my next step?
Yeah.
Just say hi back. Let's start there.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. Huh?
Yeah. So it's cool because I know when I drop my truck off at your place and you tell me what you're going to do, like you took the time to do that. Yeah. It wasn't just take the keys, get out of here. Trust us. We're all good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's cool. That's very cool.
I mean, my eyes is the main thing, though. So if you don't take care of your customers, you don't have a business.
That's the name of the game.
Yeah.
That is the name of the game.
And it's, you know, and I like that part, you know, the one-on-one talking to a customer and explaining them what you're going to do to the cars. You know?
Yeah.
Even, you know, I have customers that just like the same way, you know, they... But you know a lot about cars since, I guess, you work on your own personal car.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of people who don't.
No, they have no idea.
Yeah, they come to the shop and they trust me enough just to give me the keys but when I see someone just to give somebody just hand me the keys and then asking the questions, that's the customer I actually hold back.
So hold on a second. Like, hey. Let me tell you what you're spending your money on.
Yeah, because I want him to understand what I'm gonna do to his car, though.
Sure.
I want him to be okay. This guy, not because I wanna make myself look better, but I just make me feel better as a business owner, you know.
Right.
Telling him the customer, this is what you get, and this is how the product is gonna work. And
I suppose it also helps from a referral standpoint.
It does, yeah.
Because instead of them saying like, "Hey, I got my car undercoated," they can say, "Look, Ernesto showed me. We got this wax product, and then we got this oil product, and blah 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 blah." They actually have some education to promote you.
Yeah.
Instead of just saying, hope it's good.
Yeah, I actually noticed that where he's had, he's done customers and gave them the whole spiel. And then a friend of theirs gets a new truck and they come in like, and he's like, oh, you don't know about this product? My friend told me I'm good. Here's the keys. And it's like, that's happened on several occasions, which is, you know, I can't even fathom that really. It's quite mind blowing for me.
Right.
And one other thing we're talking about researching new products to do that he wants to introduce in this bigger shop is the coating of truck beds. And he's deep into research now, and I think that's going to be our future as well. We're really excited about that, and we have a lot of customers asking about that too.
All right.
So I feel like that's part of our future that he was talking about earlier.
I mean, we do have customers waiting for us to get the...
Oh, really?
Yeah. All right. Just like you say, you know, quality, make you wait, you know. It's like a couple customers, you guys do bed liners, so like, no, we don't, but we will in a few months.
Right.
It's okay, I'll wait for you until you guys actually, after they see the our products on, it's like, you know what, I'm going to wait for you until you get... You that's throw fair. Setup, and then mm-hmm. I would come to you before I go anywhere else.
And, yes. and we're still choosing the product. Right? And it's like, and it's so neat to have people really, customers feel this inundated with what is, you Which know, is, the situation.
I think of, let's take construction, right? We answer phones for a lot of construction companies. And a lot of construction companies just as a whole, they have a reputation of being terrible communicators, terrible from a punctuality or just being where they say they're going to be, when they say they're going to be. I can't imagine building a house or doing a remodel job.
No.
I just see, or you just hear all these stories where it's just like, hey, I'm getting my kitchen remodeled. We're 3 months past when they said it was going to be done. They said it was going to be done in a month. We've been doing dishes in our bathtub for the better part of half a year. And from the contractor's point of view, they're just like, that's the business. Yeah. And I'm thinking, like, there's no way that that should be the norm. There's no way. No, it totally is.
It shouldn't be that way.
Yeah. So when a customer finds a business like yours, and you're trustworthy, and you got a good product, everything is fair and trustworthy, they want to latch on to you and be like, what else do you do? Because I have all these problems that I want to pay someone to take care of.
Yeah.
And I haven't found anyone else that I can trust to take care of them. So.
Yeah, pretty much. So. Funny enough, you know, yesterday I just got a phone call. It was a referral. Too. Was this guy called me. His supervisor told him about us. He just got a newer truck, too.
Oh, nice.
He's like, so you guys do this, this, and that? It's like, yes, yeah, we do. Mm-hmm. And like, can I get these services and these services and this service and this amount of times? Like, oh, wait. You know? I want to get everything done for you, but I want you to see what we do first, and then we move on to the rest of the services.
All right.
Because, okay, that's fair enough. So, it's like, you kind of have to cut them back, and they want to take so many services.
But oh, sure.
I feel better off, you know, seeing the couple service first, and then take the rest after that.
Almost asking people to build their trust in you instead of just saying, trust me.
Yeah.
Interesting. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I'm the kind of person to be like, well, if you trust me, let's roll.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
So, you know, I feel like if you, no, a lot of people focus first on how much profit, how much money they can bring in, and all that stuff before they focus on the customer. Now, I don't have the mindset. That's probably one of the reasons I feel like, you know, I can actually let the customers go someplace if they'd like to.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not trying to push them into my business. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to sell my product the best I can,
mm-hmm.
but not push them in.
Sure.
If that makes any sense.
That totally makes sense.
Yeah. So that's why I feel like we have our customer base grow, because mm-hmm. they feel, you know, it's, like you say, it's really hard to find someone who's gonna
extremely hard,
you know, someone who is actually gonna care about selling mm-hmm. your product, you know. So that's the thing, that's one of the main things in my mind every time I talk to a customer, though. I'm not trying to sell them
mm-hmm.
or to make a profit, just because
mm-hmm.
I want them, you know, to make sure that they feel on their own that actually worth it for them.
Yeah, that's cool. I like it. So the you're going to end up in a new shop or expanding the existing shop?
Not sure. We're still... Okay.
Is there space, I don't know, next to you?
It's nothing much we can do.
We're going to have to kill that parking lot and throw up a building or something. Okay.
Yeah we're going to have to... If we add, which is we will, we add more service to our place, you know, we're going to mm-hmm. have to spend. There's no other way. There's nothing we can do in the shop anymore.
All right. I want to pause for a second and tell the radio people that they can keep watching or keep listening to this on drawincustomers.com, just clicking the podcast link. I am not even looking at the camera, so let me just try it here. If you're listening to this on the radio, you can go ahead and click over to the drawincustomers.com website, click on the podcast link. You can hear the rest of this conversation. We'll figure out where this is at. Anyways, I want to talk to you about employees.
Yeah.
Because employees for every business can be a challenge.
Yeah.
And for your business, you're talking service. You're talking a fairly dirty job.
Yeah.
At least I believe it's a dirty job.
No, it is. It sure is.
It sure is. And, you know, I guess it's, tell me your experience in finding, deciding you're going to have employees, and just that whole, what you've gone through with that.
Yeah. So one of my focus on getting someone working for me, though, I want to be treat them the way I would like to be treated.
Okay.
I'm not, at the time there I was working for somebody else, I'm a really hard worker, though. Mm-hmm. If I get hired by somebody, I'm gonna do the best of my abilities to get it done the way they want me to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I see it, but also like to be treated that way. You know, if I give you 110%, I want to treat me.
Sure.
Like I like exactly the same way I perform for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that I don't see in many businesses industries though. They treat everybody the same. I feel like, you know, that has the up and downs, you know, it's like fairness mm-hmm. all the way across.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for some people, it's bad for other people. Like people like me, you know, if you give it 110% of everything you do, and then there's another person who comes and does 70%.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you ended up losing on that. Mm-hmm. But so I took that mindset to my business, though. You know, even though if you're good in what you do, you take pride,
mm-hmm.
you know, I would treat you the same way.
It's all good.
Yeah,
all
right. It's all good. But I do expect a lot from you.
Mm-hmm.
I expect, you know, quality, mm-hmm. you know.
Show up.
Show up on time and don't complain. I don't like people who complain, though. I mean, because, like, we all can complain about many different things.
Oh, you could always complain about
something. It's always, something. Yeah. I'd like, you know, like, right now I only have one guy working full time.
Okay.
You know, it's a slow season right now.
Mm-hmm.
I have one of my brothers working for me full time the whole year. He just went back to Mexico for a couple months.
Okay.
So
smart man.
Yeah.
Pick the right time of year.
Yeah, but you know, the going back, it's really hard to find someone who can actually, you know, when you're that picky, it's really hard to find someone who can work for you.
Yeah. Right.
It's hard.
Very, very challenging.
But if you pay them enough, I feel. You know, you actually have to find someone who actually love what they're doing, mm-hmm. not just go to work every day.
Right. They take pride in their work.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, you can make this. It's a mindset that you go wherever you're going to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you have the mindset that you're looking for a job and you're going to do anything just to make sure you do the best you can
mm-hmm.
For that particular job,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you get paid where you get rewarded and everything,
mm-hmm.
I think. This shouldn't be that hard to find some people.
But, right.
But, you know, there's up and downs on that.
It's tough.
It's tough. So, you know, like I have the guy who works for me full time. You know, we have up and downs in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't know much about cars in the beginning, though.
Oh, interesting.
He had zero clue about how to polish the paint, how to detail a car, how to take the wheels off the truck.
All right.
Yeah. He had zero clue of
That's quite the learning curve you had to teach.
Yeah, but now he's one of the best. He's
nice. All right, so he picked up on it.
He picked up. He was a little slow in the beginning, though. But, you know, he saw the process, you know. The more effort you put in, the more you get rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
So he saw that process. It's like, okay, the more I learn, the more I take him home.
Mm-hmm.
So he saw that part. He's like, for now, I could not be without him, though.
Wow, all right.
Yeah, from where we start to where we are right now, it's like I wouldn't see myself being without him right now. He's so...
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
I think a special thing, and one thing that he was saying, what he's looking for in employees, I think one thing is also trust is a huge thing for him.
Yeah.
And he's actually known this employee from his hometown in Mexico.
Wow.
So he knew he had you know, a relationship over the years with him, and right. I think trust is something that can take a long time, especially when you're in a business setting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think me just helping him as a friend, mm-hmm. our trust has grown, and it's just been amazing how we're able to push each other too in that aspect.
Interesting. Yeah, trust is
a main thing.
Tough thing. Because I find with my employees with calls on call, I just because of what we do, I have to just trust the employees to do their job and to take care of the customers, take care of the callers, all that jazz, because I can't be behind them with every single call. And when you hire a new employee, the resume says a thing. You chat with them over an interview, but in the end, you don't know how good they're going to be
Yeah.
until they've been on the job for a little while.
Yeah.
and they've tolerated me as a boss. Tolerated. I'm hoping that's not a big deal, but I imagine there's times that you're just like, oh my God. They have to get along with the employees. There's a whole culture of the business.
Yep.
That you get one bad egg, and that's going to change the whole culture of the business. Now you got to mop that up.
Yeah.
Like, there's a whole, I guess I would say, unseen thing that's just going on with your business as far as culture and employees and the work that they're getting done and how they feel.
Yeah.
If they feel like they're being treated fairly. And I guess going into that trust thing, there's some people that are just not that good. Yeah. And they don't say that in the interview. They're not just like, you know what, I'm kind of lazy. Or I find the easiest way to get away from not doing anything. They don't tell you that in the interview.
Mm.
You have to find that out later, and hopefully that's not how they work. But there have been times that I hired people and just like, oh, you didn't tell me you were a moron. or you didn't tell me that, you know, XYZ, put whatever it is in there.
Yeah.
And there's certain just life skills that you expect people to have.
Okay, let me ask you this question. You as a business owner, though, how was easier for you to let go of some of those things? Like, to give freedom to one of you? Like, the first employers, though, how
easy is that? The first one is tough. The first one is tough. When I... let me think of my first employee. He was a nice guy, sharp guy, but not the most presentable guy.
Okay.
Mm. He had a funk. He had like an...
Yeah.
He had an aroma. The guy stunk. He was a patchouli oil, didn't believe in showers kind of guy.
Okay.
But he was very smart. Extremely smart. Like, it's one of those things like when the zombie apocalypse comes and you're in your vehicle and it breaks down and you're surrounded by zombies, he's the guy you want with you because he's going to be able to fix the truck to get away from the zombies.
Yeah.
Right? Even though he'd probably never worked on a truck before, he could just figure it out. So he had value. But there was that value versus... I had a printer repair company, right?
Yeah.
So I know the printer repair business had a challenge. Still has a challenge. We were in the customer service business as far as I was concerned. Just about any service business, I feel like customer service first, whatever you do is second.
Yeah.
Mm. Right?
That's the feel the same way.
Undercoating, rust proofing, customer service first, the rust proofing second. Yeah,
because your customers is all the way in the top.
If you have referrals, all that jazz, like you bringing the business in, that's customer service.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, nobody cares if you're the best at what you do if you're a jerk.
Yeah,
because they don't want to spend money with you.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they'll do it once, but then never again, and they're going to tell their friends, don't go to that guy.
Yeah.
So it's customer service first. Now I was thinking, this guy's super awesome, right? He's 90% of the way there. I could put him in front of any machine, and he could just figure it out. However, when he shows up in an office, and he smells like he's just been hanging out in a dumpster for the past 2 weeks, that's a bad day.
Yeah.
And that's going to reflect on my business.
True.
He got a little step further. He had some political leanings, which who cares? But he had political leanings that he wanted to share with our customers.
No,
No.
That's enough.
You're there to fix the printer, not to preach. Whatever it is you're preaching about, right? So I got a phone call from a good client, and they said, hey, here's the situation. The guy came, he fixed the printer okay, but here's what happened. And the guy tried to spread his beliefs onto the customer in a semi-aggressive way. Not physically aggressive, but just verbally aggressive, right? And so I'm like, okay, I'll talk to him. He'll never go to your place again. I'll take care of you guys, right? Because you got to take care of the customer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then let's figure out what's going on with the employee. And I'd have a conversation with the employee and say, look, here's the situation. You're super awesome at X, Y, and Z. Right? I love you, and I couldn't replace you for that. This is what we got going on. We're a small business. So you got to wear a lot of hats.
Yeah.
You got to wear the warehouse hat. We got to mop up the bathroom hat. And we got to take care of the customer hat.
Yep.
As it stands right now, you are unable to take care of the customer. So something has to change. Either you have to learn how to take a shower and keep your mouth shut, or you got to walk. And he said essentially, the shower thing, I get that, I can figure that out, but I can't in my heart. He's an idealist, right? I can't. What happened was a customer had a radio station on that was listening to some political rah-rah that he didn't like. So he didn't ask. He told them to turn it off. Like, we're not in a situation where the customer's paying you.
Oh, wow.
You listen to whatever they got on.
Yeah, you are in this case.
You're there to take care of the printer.
Yep.
Right? Doesn't matter. Just do your job. Move on with your life.
I'm curious, how when you went to address that situation, did you do it in the professional setting or, hey, let's have a couple beverages outside of work? And how was your strategy on that? I'm just very curious.
So what I typically say is that the employee knows what's going on, right? He said something and he knows, like, you don't just say, hey, shut off your radio. And the person's like, okay, that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Right? Even if you tell your kid to shut off the radio, shut off YouTube, right? That's just stupid stuff. There's going to be more of a conversation than that, right?
Right.
And it's generally speaking not going to be rainbows and moonbeams. So this guy knows something happened.
Okay.
I don't think he knows or knew that the customer called me.
Oh, okay.
So when he came in the shop, I said, hey, this customer called me. Tell me a story.
Okay.
And so I'm putting on him just because it doesn't matter how thin you slice it. There's two sides.
Yeah.
So I got the customer side. Now I want to get his side.
Mm.
He gets all red-faced and gets all fired up. He's like, they were listening to blah, 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 right?
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, well, your heart rate's getting pumped here over a radio station. Ah. So I'm like, that's when I said, okay, we got to figure this out, right? It's going to be very tough to replace you. I'm not interested in replacing you, but you're essentially forcing my hand. If we are saying that you need these things in order to fill this position as an employee, because we're small business, right?
Yeah.
You're the employee. Like, we're two people.
Yeah.
I can only do so many things. You can only do so many things. And if one of the things you're not willing to do is avoid telling the customer to change their radio station or what they're listening to, like, that's going to happen again. Some office that you go in to fix some printer at some point, somebody's going to be wearing something or listening to something that you don't like. And I need you just to ignore it. If you can't do that, we got to walk away.
What was the outcome of his...
He walked away.
Oh.
He said essentially that his beliefs, he was not willing to challenge those beliefs by ignoring those things. His whole thing was silence is acceptance in this case, right?
Mm.
And I'm like I was trying to fight for him. Like, look, dude, you know that when you tell somebody to shut off the radio, they're not going to be like, oh, you're totally right. My printer repair guy told me to shut off my radio. I'm going to not believe what he believes. It's not going to happen. You're not going to convince someone. You're not going to change their mind.
Yeah.
Even people on other radio stations aren't going to change people's mind, right? Like, people are very close-minded when it comes to stuff like that. They're religious about whatever. So I'm like, is it ideal? Or is it just this fallacy that you have in your head that is not going to come true? In the end, it doesn't matter if you work here or at any other place. Something like this is going to come up again.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to just keep hopping jobs endlessly? And he's like, I just can't do it. And I would have loved to say, hey, you know, we're big enough. We got space in the warehouse. We can tuck you in the back where you never see anybody else. You wrench on printers and move on with your life.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have that. But we were just too small of a company to have that be an option. So it was one of those like, really? You're not willing to sacrifice what I consider to be like this tiny sacrifice.
Wow.
So it was one of those... you ever just have one of those conversations with someone and you're just like, I can't believe that this is your stance.
Yeah.
I just can't... Like, you're willing to quit a job with no plan B, and there's other jobs, right? He could have gotten a different job. But there's no immediate plan B. And this job was 99% he loved it. Right, and I like to think I was a cool boss. I paid him well, blah, blah, blah.
Just for 1%.
Just for this one little thing. And so it opened my eyes to like, okay, employees want a lot of stuff that you're not going to be able to deliver on every single thing that they want.
Nope.
And there's going to be some people that get it, and there's going to be some people that don't. And you have to find the people that get it, and you don't know if they're going to get it until after they're with you.
Yep.
So I'll give you another example, right? This is my most recent employee that I hired with the whole COVID thing going on. We opened up our search nationwide because if people are working from home, like, they don't have to be in the office. They don't have to be near Sun Prairie or Madison. Why not search nationwide? We have customers nationwide. Let's just see what happens.
Yeah.
So this girl fires in from Texas. I interview her, and it's awesome. She's super cool. Interview, right? Like this half hour, 45 minute interview, right? So you can only tell so much from that conversation. So then I think, okay, what is my risk here? If I hire this person, let me pause for a second, because before her, I hired another girl out of Partyville, so 30 minutes away. I brought computer, monitors, all this equipment over to her. She didn't show up on the first day of work. She didn't show up working from home.
Whoa.
So then I had to go back there, collect all the stuff, and just... it got a little bit messy, but it wasn't... It could have been way worse. She had some personal stuff going on, and she was cool, but it could have been way worse, right? So I'm like, okay, I'm going to ship this stuff to Texas. Desk, computer, monitors, right? You got a couple thousand dollars worth of equipment. To a person that I've never met in person, to something, if they flake, that stuff's just gone. Like, you're just, you're out.
Were you seeing a video call, or were you, it was just over the phone?
It was a Zoom call.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was video. So, but in the end, like, people can fake stuff for 30 minutes, right? I've had quite a few employees that seemed super cool in the interview, and then they just wouldn't show up on the first day, or like this one, even in her own apartment, she wouldn't show up. Like, they just flaked, right? People flake. I never knew that was a thing until I got employees, and apparently it's a thing. So I'm thinking, okay, what's my risk, and then what is my reward? She seems super cool. She's super smart. Her references are like, this person's a rock star. You got to hire her. Whatever she does, she's awesome. So run with it. And I'm like, all right, we're in the business. Business is risk. I'm going to take a chance. Super awesome. Incredible employee. Just super great. Clients love her. Employees love her. Which, to get those two combined, that's a rare thing.
Yep.
Because we're in an industry where we've had people that were kind of catty in an office setting, right? There's little...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, anytime you get more than, let's say, more than one person, there's going to be, it's like anytime there's more than two cars, there's going to be a race, right?
Yeah.
Like, with any more than one employee, there's going to be either I like you, I don't like you, or just, right? This whole politics and all that kind of stuff. So we have 4 full-time employees now. This is the best culture that we've ever had. Ever.
Wow.
By leaps and bounds. The challenge, as business owners know, is that when you get better employees, you gotta pay them more. And so now we're having to lay down more cash, which that becomes a challenge, because then you have to navigate clients, you know what I mean, to be able to afford to pay them. Like, it's just, there's a little bit of a dance there.
Are you on contracts with those?
It's or month is month.
It month to month? Okay.
Mm-hmm. No, so our clients within 30 to 60 days, like, it would be a bad day, but they could all leave us all at once.
Oh.
That'd be a very bad day.
Yeah,
we'd have to really mess up. And for the volume of work that we do for our clients, not to toot our own horn, but our clients would, most of them would be in a world of hurt. We're the back end of their business, so we just do a lot of stuff for them, right? And it's the trust thing.
Yeah.
They've grown to trust us. And by us, I mean the receptionist. It's not so much me, because I'm just a dude, right? I'm the business owner that essentially sold them on the work, saying that we're super awesome. Then my crew proved that we're awesome.
Mm.
And then the people that hire us are like, wait, if you can do that, can you do this? Right? And they're just add to the point that you're doing all this stuff for these people, for their callers and for them as a business, that they don't... It'd be tough for them to go anywhere else, including hiring their own person in-house.
Yeah.
Because we know that when you hire an in-house, Are they going to show up? Are they going to never take vacation? Like, there's so many variables, right? With employees, my rule is that employees come with baggage. Every single one. It just depends how big is the bag. Is it like a tiny little tea bag? Or is it like, back to you, haul up, right?
That's an interesting way of looking at it.
Because they're people, like, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody, you, me, everyone, we got baggage of some kind.
Pretty much, yeah.
And some of us know how to just let it go and enjoy your job without that baggage. And some people are like, I'm taking that baggage everywhere I go. Right, I'm going to go in the store, and when somebody asks me paper or plastic, I'm going to tell them about my dead puppy or just whatever. Right?
Yeah.
Like, whoa! So it's tough to find employees that will fit into your culture, that will do a good job, that will show up, that are willing to tolerate whatever it is that the business does in any industry, right?
It is.
I mean, I think of the people, let's think of Quick Trip. Quick Trip, they had a billboard, I don't know if that was a year or two ago. They're looking for 500 employees. And I'm like, you're looking for 500 convenience store employees. I was looking for one receptionist at the time, and I was having a rough time.
Wow.
So I'm like, wait a second. Nights, weekends, dealing with crabby people a lot of the times. It's essentially, I guess maybe there's a corporate ladder of some kind, but it's probably not the greatest in the world.
Yeah. You think they're overshooting? They want 100 good ones, but like, let's start off with 5. Give them 6 months.
Right. Okay, you got to get rolling. Okay. Sorry, I held you. Oh, I didn't realize you're going this long. Awesome. So let's end this right there, and then.
I really appreciate your time. This has been an amazing experience.
This is cool.
And yeah, I thank you so much for this
thank
opportunity.
You guys. I feel like I can talk to you.
We can do a second one.
That's how we roll, right?
We can do part 2.
Yeah, I would love, after we expand and get that up, we would love to do this again.
Absolutely.
And I know you're going to have more experiences as you grow as well.
That's the name of the game. All right? That's what makes it fun. This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. If you're listening to this on the web, please give it a thumbs up, subscribe, comment, and share this with all your friends, all your other entrepreneur people that you know want to start their business. My name is James Kademan, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering and receptionist services for service businesses across the country. On the web at callsoncall.com, as well as Draw In Customers Business Coaching, offering business coaching services for entrepreneurs in all stages of their business. And of course, the Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur in all of us, available wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, as well as our guests, Ernesto, the owner of Madison Auto Protection and Rust Proofing, as well as his sidekick, Lester. This is good times. You guys got it. Oh, yeah. It's cool to watch as you guys grow your business. Thanks. And 2 years in, you already quadrupled it.
Yeah.
You're doing something right. That's all it comes down to. Past episodes can be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link found at drawincustomers.com. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, as well as our guests. I think I already said that, but I'll say it again. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. I want you to stay awesome. And if you do nothing else, you know what to do. Enjoy your business.